Okay, so today's daf in Masechet Nedarim, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Daled. So we're going to just take a moment over here because of the fact that the daf is very, very simple, but it's complicated. And in other words, the ideas are very simple, but you got to keep it all in your head to understand what's going on. So let's just review very simply. What are the issues that we need to take into consideration over here? There's some surprising issues. So we were talking about two main points. One of them was called Mavriach Ari. And Mavriach Ari is the question of preventing another person's loss by paying up his debt so that they can't get to him. We talked about that both in the context of standard loans and also in the context of Hegdesh and the Gizborim coming after you in the event that you have to pay the shekel. You want to pay a shekel for somebody else. And then we had a third case, which was the case of giving the person actually back an aveda. Now, these things are interrelated, but giving the person an aveda back in his hand, you can understand in one way is worse than paying off his debt, and in another way is better than paying off his debt. When I say worse or better, I mean in terms of the dinim of Isurei Hana'ah. So let's think about that. You are not allowed to give someone else Hana'ah because of a netter. So now, if you prevent him getting a loss, so we said according to Hanan, who said that if somebody pays a man's debt to his wife and gives her food, he niach mo'otava keren hatzvi, and that he doesn't have any ability, unless, of course, he made a deal with the guy. But if he just goes ahead and he hopes that the guy's going to pay him because he paid off something that the person would have to pay, he's just throwing his money out. He's not going to get it back, Tainus Hanan. So what does that mean? That means that we do not consider that something that would be mechayev you to repay it. In other words, it's not considered to be a positive hana'ah. It's a negative. I prevented you from being dragged into court. That itself is not what the meaning of hana'ah is, according to Hanan. There has to be something positive that I'm adding to you. But now let's consider the other case of giving back an aveda. Giving back an aveda, I mean, has two elements in it that make it more problematic. First of all, I'm giving you something. I'm giving you something that otherwise you might never have gotten in your hands at all. Nobody else might have been able to find it and give it back to you. So if I give it to you, you can't say, well, you're just preventing me a loss. What do you mean? I gave it to you. And furthermore, in the event that I pay up your loan, I don't have any dealings with you. And the hana that accrues to you is basically an ancillary thing that comes out of the fact that I was dealing with the malver, I was dealing with the gizbar of Hegdesh who was going to come after you, but I have nothing to do with you. So I understand that that is not included in the issur of giving you hana'ah. But when I return an aveda to you, I put it in your hands. And that is like a direct, not only an actual positive hana'ah, but it's hana'ah that I'm dealing with you directly. And it's the very relationship that was usur, lechora, in the neder. So let's take those two possibilities into consideration, which means that what we thought was a simple equation over here, in which we have three cases, paying up your shekel, paying up your debt, handing you back your avedah, they're all the same. They're not all the same. Yet on the other hand, the avedah may be better because the avedah, I mean, that's my own thing. Understand, you're giving me back my own thing. You're not going to call that being mahanemi, are you? So we have, therefore, a way of looking at it the opposite. The avedah, I'm just giving you back what's yours. But in the case where I pay off your debts, for God's sake, I'm adding $100,000, basically. I mean, it's true, it's like a roundabout, but you came out getting an extra $100,000 out of this, right? So you can see that we have different ways of analyzing what the main elements are of the Isurei Hana'ah when it comes to these two sets. One set has one member, Hashavas Haveda. The other set, the Mishnah, has two members, the Shokel HaShiklo and the Shilum of his Halva'ah. That's in that direction. Where the person that's giving the aveda back, the person that's paying the debt, is not allowed to be mehaneh the other person. Now, how about in the opposite case? How about in a case where the person who's giving the aveda back is not allowed to be neheneh from the person to whom he's giving the aveda? Now, that would seem to be pretty obvious. I mean, what am I getting out of the fact that I'm paying him, giving him back his aveda? I mean, what, I have a mitzvah, and that's not enough from him. And yet we came up with a very interesting thing, that because of the fact that due to my working with his aveda, I now bought myself a mishulachim policy, which allows me to get away with murder when the doorbell rings. I don't have to answer the doorbell for the mishulachim because, well, I'm very busy right now taking care of so-and-so's aveda. I got no time for mishulachim. That's called pruta de Rav Yosef. So there was a shita that brought up the possibility that maybe even though there's no problem of giving back an aveda where I am not allowed to be mehane, the person who owns the aveda, but it would be usher in a case where I am not allowed to be nehene from the person to whom I'm giving the aveda, because then I'm getting a free mishulachim policy, and those are valuable policies. So lechora, that would be considered to be an isser. So we had a machlokas about that, and we had one shita that said a mishulachim policy isn't really worth very much if this is the way you buy it, because what's the chances that Dafka, I mean, you know how it is. Murphy's Law says that the moment that you put the aveda back in the box, that's when the doorbell rings with the mishulach. So anybody who knows Murphy's Law isn't going to buy that kind of mishulachim policy. It's a lousy policy. And therefore, it isn't really worth anything. Those were the approaches that we were talking about. Now, there's one additional issue. And the other issue is it's essential to keep all of these points in mind. The other issue is, what if this is a locale where someone who returns an aveda is compensated for the returning of the aveda because he's usually going to lose some time on the job in order to be able to return the aveda? So there's the question. The Mishnah said, in a very opaque statement, because it didn't say who is usher on who, but the Mishnah said that there's definitely a case, I mean, the Pashas, it means both cases, where the Hana'ah will have to be given to Hegdash. Now, that's strange. Why would the Hana'ah have to be given to Hegdash? So, the simple way of looking at it would be that if the event is that I am returning something to you, and you are supposed to be paying me for my lost time, and I refuse to accept that payment because, I wouldn't take money for giving you back an aveda. What do you think I am? So then you have a problem in the event that you are not allowed to be nehenef from me, right? Because I'm saying I refuse to accept that money, but this is money due you. And that means that you are basically being mahanami with this money. And in that case, it should be usher. And therefore, the hana'ah should fall to Hegdash. Now, that's one way of looking at it. And that's the way that we were assuming that that's the only way that it makes sense to say that tipol hana'ah la Hegdash. However, what about if we consider this possibility? The fact that the person who is being paid is getting hana'ah from the Baal Ha'aveda for the work that he did. And in the event that he is usher b'hana, not that the Baal Ha'aveda is usher b'hana, but he's usher to get hana'ah from the Baal Ha'aveda, so then when the guy comes to pay him, he would not be allowed to accept that payment because that payment is coming from someone who is usher b'hana'ah on him. That's the question. Now, is that true, that I cannot accept payment from him? Now, that is the big issue today about the two approaches we're going to have in understanding the Gemara. The two approaches go like this. If I, the Baal Aveda, am paying money to the person who gave me back and that person benefits from the money that I'm paying you, so then if he is not allowed to benefit from me, he should not be allowed to get that money. And maybe that's the case that the Mishnah is talking about when it says Tipol Hana Ala Hekdesh. On the other hand, the argument goes exactly the opposite. In the event that the person who's being paid is not allowed to get Hana'ah, that's fine, because he's not getting Hana'ah. All he's getting is the compensation for his own lost work. It's not as if there's a general concept that anything that you get from me is ipso facto Hana'ah, because if that were the case, then I should not be allowed to do business with you. But the halacha is that it's as long as I'm not doing you a big favor, because it's a al ape, it's al panav, it's garbage, and you know you could get the same deal or better somewhere else, so I'm not doing you any favors, then there's no problem in my selling it to you, right? Isn't that what we went through the whole sugya yesterday? So then if that's the case, why can't I simply give the person back the money that he lost in being mahzer the aveda? And therefore, according to this approach, it's the exact opposite that would be the problem. The problem would be that in giving back the aveda, then if the guy is going to pay me and I'm the one that's also that would be fine. But if I am mevater and refuse to accept that, and the bal aveda is not allowed to get hanav from me, then he's the one that's going to be over. You understand? That means that we could read two cases in our Mishnah in exactly opposite ways. When it comes to Ashavas Aveda, we could say that giving someone an Aveda is giving him an Hana'a even though it's his. Or we could say that that is the last case that we would consider it to be a Hana'a, because he's merely getting back what it is that he had before. So the fact that you happen to return it, but that's not Hana'a from you, from your things, that's Hana'a from my own things. Those two cases are reversible. And the other case, where does the Hana'a have to be Neufel HaHegdesh, is also reversible. If you understand that the problem is getting money from someone for doing that work is usser, so then the problem case would be where the returner, the person who's giving back the Aveda, is not allowed to benefit from the Baal Aveda. And what does he do with the money? If the guy's giving him the money, it has to be Neufel HaHegdesh. The other way of looking at it is on the contrary. If that person is being paid, he's just being paid for the money that he lost. But if he is the one that's not supposed to be giving Hana'a to the Bala Aveda, then if he refuses to be paid, then that money has to be given to HaHegdesh by the Bala Aveda. The logic behind the two approaches, I must tell you, that, I mean, the Rishonim do not really discuss the logic behind both tzadim. In other words, what would be the problem in paying a person for his work? But I would suggest that the problem is, even though the Ran firmly comes down on the side of how could it be a problem to pay someone for money that he lost anyway, so many Rishonim argue on him. And that was basically the approach we were taking until now, that not like the Ran. Because today is where the Ran changes the gears here in our Gemara, as we're going to see. But the logic, I would suggest that the logic is that this idea of payment for somebody who returns an Aveda is really not a completely tit-for-tat idea. Because there are places, remember, that Chazal were kuvea payment because of norms. And that would mean, I mean, what if the guy Lemaisa ended up returning the Aveda during his coffee break? So he didn't really lose any money. He lost his coffee break, right? We're not going to make a nafkamina la halacha in terms of the chiev that you have. The guy comes, he gives you your Aveda. You ask him, how long did you work in order to get the Aveda back? Well, it took me 2 hours. I had to take 2 hours off of work. What do you get paid for 2 hours of work? X, Y, and Z. Fine, so I pay you X, Y, and Z. But that is not strictly a replacement of lost money, because it's a standard. And wherever you're dealing with the standard, it's very likely that you will exceed what the actual losses are, and he'll get more money. But then there's yet another issue. Remember that when it comes to the dinim of payment for lost work, which is called Shevet. You have to take off the difference between the type of work that you're doing and the type of work that you would have been doing. In other words, let's say you damaged the person that now he has no use of his hands. Until now, he was a diamond cutter, right? And now you're also going to be paid, so you have to pay him for his hands. Well, that makes a permanent difference in terms of his value on the market, on the slave market. What do you pay for a guy who's got brilliant hands for diamond cutting? And what would you pay for the same person who doesn't have hands? Well, that's a heck of a lot of money, but that you paid him already. In addition to that, he's been laid up in the hospital. You have to pay him Shevet. Do you pay him for the work of the loss that he used to make $100 an hour, and now you pay him for every one of those lost hours? No, because he is not doing that work anymore, right? He's now, his work is going to be to sit around and ask people to open up their pocketbooks so that he could look through it, see if there's bombs in it, whatever, right? But it's going to be a much lower level job. So remember that we also make that difference in terms of how much would a person be willing to take in order not to work on the job he's working, which is digging ditches, and instead he'll take an easier job of being a watchman at the entry to a shopping plaza. But over here, we're not making that distinction. This guy may be a digger of ditches who's working himself to half to death, and now he finds an aved and he says, whew, thank God, I'm going to have a two-hour vacation, right? So now he returns the aved, which was very simple. Meanwhile, he's walking through the fields, looking at the birds and saying, well, what a lovely day. Halavaya would find an aved to return every day. Then he comes to the guy and he says, okay, here's your aved. All right, how much work did you lose? 2 hours. How much do you get paid? I get paid $50 an hour, so now I'm going to be paid $50 an hour for bird watching. No, wait a minute. So you can understand that this idea of paying the guy a sella because of the law sella is not so pashut that would not be considered to be giving him anah. So you can understand the machlokas harishonim in this issue in terms of how we define the repayments and whether it's the actuality that's the issue. And the fact that, look, I happen to be very happy doesn't mean I'm happy because of you. It's just that this is the way it worked out, you see. So you understand the various possibilities here in the subtle definitions of what we mean by hana'a. Okay. What is included in the hana'a where the person asers himself to hana'a from the other person? But meanwhile, we're left with a Mishnah that is hanging because it could mean opposite things at every stage. And in fact, that's what we're going to be going through now and see how the different approaches would be to understand the different clauses in the Mishnah. So up until now, we've handled
Rebbe's choosing Shevet as a tool to open up the sugya, as opposed
No, I'm not really. It's a very loose comparison. Obviously, Shevet is different because you actually paid him for the yad. I'm just making a general insight that work has to take into consideration the context of the type of work that you're talking about. Obviously, it's not like Shevet. I didn't mean it seriously.
No, I understand, but Rebbe's choosing that over Schar Batola. Right?
You know, you're right. 100%. Schar Batola is the issue over here. But we're not taking into consideration the element of the difference of the work that he would be doing. So, you know, that's a problem. If we would actually work out that we're only going to pay him Keneget Schar Batola, so then ain't no, then it wouldn't be a problem. Maybe that's what the Machlokas is dependent on in the Rishon. Okay. All right. So, Rabotai, let us begin, therefore. Let's just start again at the two dots, if you don't mind, on Lamed Gimel Amud Beit, because that way we can see the whole thing spread in front of us properly and see the various approaches. So I think what's going to be easiest to do is to first go through the sugya with the girsa in our Gemara, which is not the girsa of the Ran, and then go back and look at it from the opposite point of view, which is the girsa of the Ran. Because the problem is over here that we have both approaches in the sugya itself, no matter how you read the sugya. the difference between Hashavas HaVeda and the Tipol Hana HaHekdesh and so on, but we also have two different Girsos in the Sugya, which make opposite assumptions at various stages of the Sugya. I don't know how important it is for you to break your heads over the details here, because the important thing is to come out with the four possibilities that we discussed. The question of how exactly we arrange them, as I say, it's a bit complicated because you have to keep in mind every different girsa in the Gemara with the two lashonos in the Gemara, and therefore they're completely different pirushim, so you end up with a lot of elements that are variations. But if you don't let that frustrate you, then it's very easy to recognize what the issues are. And depending on the girsa, you understand that all of these issues, lemaisa, end up being raised in the sugya. So let's start again from the two dots on Lamed Gimel Amud Beit. Machzir lo et avedato. So we start off with the machlokas between Rebbe Ami and Rebbe Asi. And that is what really starts the ball rolling over here. The question is, since the Mishnah didn't say who is us or on whom, it's left things open. So this explains how we get into all of these fakers. So one, we don't know who says what, but one of these two shitas says that all of this is only talking about a case where the nechasim of the man who's doing the returning are us or on the Baal HaVeda. So then, yes, if he's giving him back his Aveda, well, he's not giving him anything. After all, it's his own thing. But in the event that the Baal HaAveda's things are prohibited on the one who's doing the returning, then, very counterintuitively, he would not be allowed to give it back to him. Why? Because he's giving him, in this case, a free Mishulachim insurance policy, which is called Pruta de Rav Yosef. And therefore, he wouldn't be allowed to give it back because he's benefiting by giving it back. Whereas the other approach was, no, it doesn't matter. Even in a case where the Nichse Baal HaAveda are Asurin on the one who's returning it, we don't care about the anti-Mishulachim insurance, and he can still give it back. And Mishum Pruta de Rav Yosef lo shchiach. The point of Pruta de Rav Yosef, it's a lousy policy. Nobody would invest in this. If you could really have an anti-Mishulachim policy, fine. Then it's a worthwhile policy. But in this case, what are the chances that the Mishulach is going to ring the doorbell just at the time that you're taking care of the event? That's very shvach. You know what this is like? This is like the people who end up buying insurance policies, which are only life insurance policies in the event that they are killed in an automobile accident, let's say, right? So then they think, oh, wow, okay, that's so much cheaper than life insurance. It's about 1,000 times more expensive than life insurance. Because in terms of the actuarial tables, I mean, you're spending an incredible amount of money, really, in terms of how much coverage it's giving you. The coverage is minimal. So it's a little ridiculous to pay that kind of money. Oh, but it's only this amount of money. That's the same idea of over here. So it's not a valuable kind of thing. You know, you get these phone calls all the time. Fantastic deal we're going to give you for only $5 a month, which is the equivalent to spending $300,000 for regular life insurance policy. Anyway, so that's the machlokas about Pruta Shel Rav Yosef. Now, we have our Mishnah in today's new Gemara, which begins here. Our Girsa goes like this. Tonight, in a place, the Mishnah says, in a place where there is money paid to people who return an Aveda, it says, Tipol Hana Al HaHekdesh. Those are the words in the Mishnah. Now, can you explain to me what the case is when you say that the Hekdesh is the one that's going to get it and you can't take it yourself? So if we're going according to the Mandi Amar, we don't know which one, but we said, one Mandi Amar said that you can include the heter of giving back an Aveda, even in the event that the Baal HaAveda, his nechasim or usher on the person that's returning it, and there's no problem of Pruta de Rabbi Yosef, that explains why the Mishnah would say, but where it's basically Amakam Shenotin Alea Sachar, then you have to let that Sachar go to Hekdesh, because I understand why, since we're talking, if the finder would be taking that money, so then he would be getting hana'ah from the person that he's not allowed to get hana'ah from, which is the Baal HaAvedah. But if you hold that in a case where you're not allowed to get hana'ah from the Baal HaAvedah, you're not allowed to even return it, so then where would there ever be hana'ah to be given to Hekdesh? I'm not allowed to return it, so you're certainly not going to pay me for returning it, which I didn't do. So what's the case of tipul hana'ah l'Hekdesh? Now, this is making the assumption that it is prohibited to pay someone who is usur b'hana'ah from you in the event that you're paying him for his lost work. So we explain why that's true. But this was the approach that we understood in the Gemara. This is the Rosh's approach. It goes against the Ran. This is the Girsa here that we have, which is against the Girsa of the Ran. And it takes for granted that you're not allowed to pay someone in compensation for having brought you back your Aveda. And therefore, the only way that the Mishnah works is in the event that you were actually allowed to return the Aveda to this person who's now going to pay me, even though I'm not allowed to get Hanaf from him. But what if you hold that you're never allowed to give him back his Aveda because of the Mishulachim insurance, and therefore the Mishnah cannot be talking about a case where you gave back an Aveda to someone from whom you're not allowed to get Hana'ah? There's never a case of tipul hana'ah l'hekdesh. So lamandi armar, in the event that the nichse bala aveda are usur on the person who's returning the aveda, he's not even allowed to because of the mishulachim, meaning because of pruta de Rabbi Yosef, where is there ever a case of tipul hana'ah l'hekdesh? No, says the Gemara. The Mishnah didn't claim that in all cases that's true. In one of the two cases, it's true. So in the event that the person who's doing the returning, his hana'ah is also on the person to whom the Aveda belongs, so over there, if I, the Baal Aveda, am supposed to be paying him, and he says, I don't take money for returning Avedas. So now that means that he's giving me money, but his hana'ah is also on me. That's where it says, tipul hana'ah l'hekdesh. As to the other case, you're right. That case, the Mishnah wasn't referring to when it said tipul hana'ah l'hekdesh. Okay, now that approach is the approach of the Rosh. Makes perfectly good sense. It's predicated on two ideas. Issue number one, it is prohibited to pay someone for lost work in the event that he returned an Aveda if he is not allowed to get hana'ah from you. That's issue number one. Issue number two, there is no problem of giving a person back his own Aveda. That's this approach that we just had. Now, there's also there's also the opposite approach, which some learn from the beginning, that actually the machlokas between Rabami Verabasi was not the way that we understood it. Here's how it goes according to them. When do we say this, that you're allowed to give back an Aveda? That's only in a case where the Nichse Ba'al HaAvedar Surin Alamachzir, where the one who's returning it is not allowed to get Hana'ah from the Ba'al Aveda. That is the only case where you can return an Aveda. Well, what about insurance of Mishulachim? No. Pruta de Rav Yosef, lo shliach, that's not considered to be a good insurance. But in the opposite case, where the nichse machzira asurna bala aveda, if the returner is usur on the guy who lost it, he can't give him back the aveda because he is being mehanehim. Now, this is the opposite approach. The original approach is you could certainly give back an aveda. I mean, for heaven's sakes, it's his own thing. Imagine if you're allowed to pay back his loans, so is there any question that you can give him back as an Aveda? That was the first approach. But this approach is, no, you can pay back his loans, yes, but you can't give him back an Aveda for two reasons. A, you're giving it back directly to him, and that's precisely what the Hana answered. B, you're actually positively giving him something. You are giving him something that might otherwise never have been his to see again. In the other event, where you're paying back a loan, it's mavriach hari. You have no connection to the guy himself, and you're not giving him something positive. You're just seeing to it that something negative doesn't happen, which might not have happened anyway. So therefore, that would be mutter. But that would mean that the three cases in the Mishnah should not be understood as being the same. Two out of the three cases are mutter, no matter who is us or on the other. But one of the three cases, namely the heter to give him back the aveda, that is only true in the event that the Baal HaAveda is the one that is usher to give hanah to the returner. But if the returner is usher to give hanah, then he can't give him back his aveda, because that's a positive hanah. The exact opposite of the way we learned before. See? Okay. So then this is taking for granted that you're not allowed to return an aveda. Whereas Chadamar, no, you can return it even then. Why? Because you're giving back his own thing. There's no problem. You're giving him back his own thing. In this version, the Taina of the Gemara from the Mishnah goes against the first approach. Tonight. So I understand if you learn that even in the case where the Nichse Machzir or usher on the Baal Aveda, I'm allowed to give him back his Aveda because it's his own thing. Then there's no problem. Give it back to him. Okay, so then that would explain the Mokum, meaning that in the event that the guy doesn't want to accept the money for returning it, and we're talking about a case where his property is usher on the Baal Aveda, so he's giving the Baal Aveda money. So that's why the Mishnah is saying, Tipol ana ala hegdash. Hainu demkom etaretz makom. But according to the other man, the Omar, who holds that you're not allowed to give the guy back his Aveda if he is not allowed to benefit from you, there is no case, not like we had before where we're trying to explain, let one of the cases at least work. And we were worried about why both cases don't work. Over here, no case works. Because the case where the person who's returning it is not allowed to give it back because his hana is also on the Baal Aveda. So where's the case? There's never money to fall to Hegdash. What money? What are you talking about? The only money that we could be talking about is money that you were supposed to pay the guy for the work that he did in returning it to you, but he's not allowed to return it to you. So where's the case? There is no case. So if you're telling me, Laman di Omer b'shenichzei machzira usher, he's not even allowed to return it. So where is the explanation of the case? Because in the other event, where you're going to say that what would we say is the alternative? Because we said over here that if you give him back the Aveda, that you're not even allowed to give him back the Aveda in this case, if you cannot be Mahana him. So then there's no case at all. Where would there be Tipol Ana Ala Hegdash? And here we don't have an answer because we can't say Bechoda. What do you mean Bechoda? Which Choda? If the problem is that the Baal Aveda is not allowed to be Mahana you, well, he's just paying you for lost work, you see? So this approach in the Gemara has got to agree with the way that the Ran and the Rosh argued in the first case, has got to agree with the Ran, you see? That's why I say it doesn't matter whether you attribute this to the Machlokas and the Rishonim or you attribute it to the two Lashonis in the Gemara. But the bottom line is that the Gemara is taking for granted that to pay the guy, that can't be Tipol Ana Ala Hegdash. Because to pay a guy for the work that he did, why can't he accept that? That can't be the case. The only possible case could have been where he is not allowed to be Mahana you for returning your Aveda, and but then he couldn't give you the Aveda in the first place. So where would be the case where he refuses to accept payment? So it doesn't work in either event. That means that in this new Lashon, we have completely reversed our first approach. Our first approach was you could certainly give him back an Aveda because it's his own. Our second approach is, no, you can't give back the Aveda because you're giving him something positive. And the three cases in the Mishnah have to be split up into two sets. Paying back the loans, giving it back an Aveda. Fine. As far as the other assumption is concerned, we also reversed ourselves. In the first approach, we said that giving the guy payment would be something that's awesome. How could you pay him? In this, and therefore, the Dipal Anala Hekdash would be that Anna, the money that he has to pay me, but I can't accept it. But in the second case, there's no problem in paying someone work that he did. The only case where it would be Dipal Anala Hekdash would be the opposite case, where I refuse to accept the money that you owe me for the work that I did. But there couldn't be according to this work that I did because I'm not allowed to return it to you. So there, that explains the two Lashonos, and that is the way that the Gemara basically opens up the entire issue in both directions. Now, just to be mashlim it, which I'm not sure is worth the time, but I don't think it's right to go through the sugya without even mentioning the Ran's alternative girsa. So just to be mashlim it, if you take a look at the Ran over here right at the top of Amud Aleph, where he has a different girsa, and you will see that basically it boils down to the same assumptions that the Gemara comes out with in the second approach. So there's nothing really that is completely new here. So according to the Ran, the kasha on the first approach to the Machlokas Rabbami and Rabbasi is as follows. It's not. It says in the Mishnah, Mokam Shenotim Alaschar Tipolana Ala Hegdesh, and here he reverses the Gemara. And the girsa goes, so Bishlam Alamandi Omar Bishinik say Hamachzir Asurna Bala Veda, but then you can return it. But the Bala Veda Asurin Alamachzir, then you're not allowed to return it because of Pruta de Rabbi Yosef. So that would explain Mokam Shenotim Alaschar Tipolana Ala Hegdesh. But according to the Mandi Omar, that if the Nichse Baal HaAveda or Asurin Ala Amachzir, that he's still allowed to be Mahader, then why would both cases be true that Tipol Hana Ala Hegdesh? Because if the Nichse Baal HaAveda are Asur on the Machzir, and there is no problem of Pruta de Rav Yosef, then I can certainly be paid for the work that I did, because you're just compensating me for loss. That's the way the Ran understands it, which boils down to the assumptions that the Gemara makes at the end anyway in talking about the Ikedi Amri and the Machlokas Rabbami Rabbasi. If you didn't follow all of the ins and outs of that, it really is not important, because in a week from now, you won't remember all the ins and outs. And even Rabbeinu HaKadosh said, boy, it's, you know, I mean, about Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it was a good thing that that this was read, because anybody else that you asked about a sugya that you're not holding in with these kind of complexities would have thrown up his hands. Get out of here, man. But the main question is to remember the variations. That's the main point. Because then you're going to have to, if you got the halacha comes before you, now you know exactly what needs to be taken into consideration in all of the different levels of how we define the nature of Hana. And I think that's what you should focus on. Because otherwise it's so many different elements arranged in so many different ways. Okay, so fine. This goes on now to the next sugya. Omar Rava. Haitalefanav kikar shel hefker. Now on the surface, what it is that we're about to get into does not have anything to do with what we did just discuss. And the question is, what is it doing here bichlal? We'll only understand what it's doing here bichlal when we finish this very long amud, and then we get to the, we get to the end of it, and you'll see how it bears some small resemblance to the shilas that were raised at the end of the discussion. So first, let's talk about a case like this. A guy's walking along the road, and he sees a kikar shel hefker. And he says, this kikar should be hegdash. And then he picks it up and he eats it. So the din is he has to pay hegdash the full value of what he ate, because he stole it from hegdash. Now, this is very confusing. And it's predicated on the number of issues that we need to be aware of. I mean, why do we have to be talking about where a guy was walking along the road? I mean, we're not talking about Shiluach HaKein over here. Like, what in the world? Why can't we just say, if a guy said this should be Hegdash, and then he takes it and he steals it from Hegdash, so then he would pay according to the whole thing, right? I mean, so that you have to understand is based on the very simple halacha that once a guy owns something and he makes it hekdesh when it's in his reshus, he is essentially the gizbar of hekdesh, because it was always in his reshus, and now it's his responsibility to get it to hekdesh, and therefore it would make no difference at this point if he picks it up in order to eat it. He didn't take it out of the reshus of hekdesh. We want to say that if you just pick it up in order to eat it, then you're taking it away from the reshus of hekdesh. Now, that's true if you would see something of hekdesh and you'd steal it. You pick it up and you say, now it's mine, ha, ha, ha. Then you're chayav on me'ila, lefi kula. My intent is to eat it, and I'm going to be kind of it. But not if you already had it in your reshus. Who cares? Look, I don't care. Did you eat it or didn't you eat it? Don't tell me you picked it up. It was always in your reshus. I don't give a hang if it's in your closet or it's in your hands. It's always been in your reshus. You're the gizbar. A gizbar cannot be male unless he's actually nana, you see? So that's why this is based on somebody walking along the road and finding hekdesh. How do you find hekdesh along the road? You made it hekdesh. Ah, but this raises another issue. How can you make something hekdesh that isn't your own? Isn't there a din that you can only make something hekdesh when it's yours? And it has to be my beis. So we learn that out from Ishki Agdish et Beito Hekdesh. That means my Beito Bershuto Avko Bershuto. So how could you make Hekdesh out of a Hefker? So the whole thing doesn't make any sense. Now, so that leads to a number of different approaches, okay? So one approach, the approach of the Rosh, is that in the event that you're making something Hekdesh and you are then going to be getting it, and it's just a matter of it's being biyotcha, you can now pick it up and make it yours. So then there's no problem of ma beito brishuto, because this is considered to be now biyotcha, and therefore, even though you weren't konit for yourself, nonetheless, you then, at the moment that you're koinet for hekdesh. And in that event, it was never in your reshus. So if it was never in your reshus, if you now pick it up, so then you're going to be male if you pick it up in order to keep it and eat it, right? Even if you weren't nene, because you're not the gizbar. That's one approach. There is another approach of the Tosfos Reed, in which the din that ma beito b'reshuto only means it can't be in someone else's reshus. But if it's hefker, there's no problem of being magdish something which is hefker. And most Rishonim don't agree to this. Yet another approach seems to be, there's a machlokas among the Achronim, what the Ran really means. But another approach is that since there is a kinyan of betoch arba amotav, and that is really a kinyan derabona. So if you're walking along, remember that we have a concept of personal space. Personal space becomes very important to people when they get into elevators with murderers. Well, everybody's a murderer when they get into the elevator, right? So that's the personal space issue. Okay, so Chazal or Mitaken, but that personal space is Arba Ames. If you're walking along, your personal space extends around you, and therefore you could be kind of with that personal space. So now, there's a number of issues. I'm sorry to do this, but this Masechet is unbelievably rich in subtleties, okay? So now the question is whether a kinyan derabanan is mayel for a kinyan deraisa. So if the rabbanan said that this is yours because you could be kinyan with Arba HaMaisav, would you be able to use that kinyan derabanan to make it hegdash? That is a big machlokas in and of itself, okay? Then there's another issue. The other issue is that, look, I mean, we know in Bab Metzia we have this thing. If somebody tells you, pick that Metzia up for me, right? So then he can be kona for you and not for himself. So now, if that's the case, then the Arba Amotav that we're talking about over here, since the person was Megala Bedato, that he wants this to be Hekdesh, so then possibly, again, the Ran is a little bit unclear about what he means. I personally believe that he does not mean what the Rosh is saying, that at the point when you get into the Arba Amos, so then you're kind of for Hekdesh. I believe that what he's trying to say is that since you were Megalad Da'at, that what you want your Kinyan to be useful for is to transfer this to Hekdesh, the Arba Amot work directly to transfer to Hegdash, just as if you were Kainan Aveda for somebody else, and it's not yours at all. And then you can't change your mind, because you're already Kainan it for him. This is Sugim Bo Mitzia. Okay, in any event, the Gemara is definitely saying that it's possible to be Magdish in one of these ways, something that had not yet been yours, and to make it Hegdish. Exactly whether that means only at the point that it would have become yours, or that's not important for us here. But what is important is to say, to give us an insight into the dinim of Me'ila. So if you pick something up in order to steal it, and you're going to eat it, so then your Me'ila was a kinyan to take it completely out of the Rishus of Hegdish, to be nana to that extent. What if you pick it up in order for it to be a trust fund for your children? Fine. So then you want to be Moirish it to your children. Okay. You're not going to get anything out of it. In order to pay Hegdash, we have to determine what would giving your children a trust fund be worth to you. Now, it's not worth the full extent. What you're doing is you're doing something that your children will be grateful for. How much is that gratitude worth to you? As a parent, I must warn you, zero. But since people don't believe that until they learn from bitter experience, so they believe that it's actually worth some tovat hana'ah. Okay, so what would they pay? So let's say the guy would be willing to pay 50% of its actual monetary value for having his kids. It's sort of like saying, you know, what would a brownie point for your wife be worth? You know, it expires in 10 seconds. I mean, I don't know how much it's worth. So, okay. So the same issue would be true over here. But whatever it's worth is called the Tovat Hana'ah. So is Ma'al Lafi Tovat Hana'ah Shaba. And here is the excuse for bringing this up, because it does not seem to belong here at all. If somebody says, Kikri Alecha, my loaf of bread is osur on you, Bahana'a, and then he gives it to this person as a gift. So now it's no longer his loaf of bread, right? Now that's a general concept. If you say, this is very important to know, we'll see this later on. If you say, this thing which is currently mine should be usher on you forever, then even if the person who made the neder dies, gives it away, it's no longer his. It doesn't matter. Because since this is similar to Hegdash, he once made it Hegdash on this person, it doesn't go away. But if he says, this thing of mine is usher on you, then it's only usher as long as it's his. The moment that it isn't his, then it's not usher. The question is, how do we explain the language? He said, my loaf is usher alecha. Now, alecha is a lashon of Hegdash. So how do we look at this? Do we say, Kikri Amar Lo? Look, the guy said, my loaf. It's not his loaf anymore. If he gave it to you, now it's your loaf. Which means, Ki ite b'rishutehu da'asr. It would only be prohibited as long as it's in his rishus. But now he gave it to you. O Dilma, maybe alecha means, Aluye shivite hegdash. I made it, because that's a lashon of alecha. I made it hegdash on you. And that would remain forever usher. It doesn't matter whether now currently I own it. And therefore, if I gave it to you, that doesn't change anything. Omar Lay, so Rava said, listen, that's obvious. Because what would be the point of saying, my kikar, pshita, the afagav, the oivle, b'matana, usher. It's clear to me that it would be 100% usher. Because, look, I mean, explain to me what you think the word means. If this word, kikri alecha, comes to what? La fuke mai. What do you think it's coming to say? If you steal it from me, so then it's going to be usher. I don't understand. What are you trying to usher the guy on? I mean, if you're trying to tell him, I don't want you to have the kicker, why the heck did you give him the kicker? Don't give him the kicker. That's up to you. That'll be in your hands. I'm like a netter. So if you're saying it's usher, so what? You really think the guy's going to break into your house in the middle of the night, open up your bread-making machine, and steal your kicker? Oh, come off it, man. So what you must have meant when you said that, is that you don't want him ever to be Nene from this kicker. Why would you say that? Because maybe the point is that it should remain Usher no matter what. Says Rav Bar Avin, why? I don't understand. What if this is a guy who is making you nuts about inviting him for a Shabbos meal, right? Okay, so then if you invite him for a Shabbos meal, he's going to be able to eat your food. But if you usher the kicker on him, so then when you invite him to the Shabbos meal, he's going to say, oh, what's the point of being invited for Shabbos if I'm not allowed to eat? Aha! So he'll stop driving you crazy. That's why you said it. Why does it have to be that I'll steal it from you? Now, gentlemen, this leads to a tremendous issue. And that is, if you're invited to a wedding, can you take something home to give to your wife? She wasn't invited. You're eating at somebody's house. It's put in front of you. To whom does it belong now? Are you eating the other person's thing, or are you eating your thing? Now, this makes all kinds of nafkaminas, not only in terms of Nedarim. And there's a big machlokas about this among the Paiskim. So many taina, I don't understand. You see clearly from this Gemara that this is Reb Kivager brings us, Azariah. You see clearly from this Gemara that if somebody is eating in your home and you had ossered him on eating your kikar, he is eating your kikar, not his kikar. Because otherwise this would be the same as the question that Reb Chaya Bar Avin had raised. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. However, that tobacco is usher on you. So now what's going to happen?